This is Dan Bellis. Did you ever miss a sale and wonder why? Interestingly enough, your prospect might also wonder why he did not give you an order. The reason could have been your inadvertent use of negative image-building words instead of positive image-building words. Some words sell, some words unsell. In this truly outstanding message, Tom Norman gives you 24 selling words to use and 24 unselling words to avoid. When you learn these 48 words and how to use them, they will make a difference in your sales.
There is a consumer revolution going on right now, and I want to talk about cybernetic words. Now, this does not take away from the premises, the philosophies, and the principles that Mr. Bellis talked about in his communications. There are some mental human computers which will react in exactly the same way when they hear a word. In other words, some of us, because of childhood, because of our experiences, because of television, because of commercials, because of ads, because of professional salesmen, because of certain words, we will not see exactly the same picture, but we will respond with a favorable picture of our own. That's what I'm saying. A person thinks in terms of pictures, not words. And if I said the word circus, you would not see the word circus as though printed on the blackboard, but everybody sees his own picture of circus. Well, that means there are some words then which will create favorable images in the minds of the people who hear them, even though they're not exactly the same image as I have when I say the word. I want to give you a tool that will eliminate some of the consumer revolution, some of the resistance, some of the anxiety that a prospect has when you're presenting to him your product or service in a beneficial way, using words and hopefully confident physical body language along with it. Research Institute of America in late 1969 came out with a report, a warning to their service clients, the people who subscribe to Research Institute of America. Let me quote it to you. The Research Institute of America, in a recent report to its members, had this to say about today's buying climate. Customer dissatisfaction, flood stage, still rising, and no crest in sight. That is the warning that Weather Central is currently conveying to business. No matter what you sell, no matter what you make, you are in danger. Manufacturers, distributors, those who offer services, all are direct targets of customer resentment. Forget the old business armor plate, buyer beware. Now, today's contemporary is seller beware. There's no point in protesting that this change is unfair. It amounts to a revolution. And some of it, at least, will stick. Yet, handled right, customer dissatisfaction can be turned from a threat into an asset. Imaginative action can give you a valuable competitive edge. End of report. What I'm saying is, and what they've said is, there is some revolution in the minds of the people who buy and use products and services. Let's see if we can work an analogy. One of the problems we have in presenting an idea or a benefit or a service to another person is the fact that he does not tune us in, or once tuned in, he tunes us out. It's sort of like a radio. If I had a transistor radio right here, you couldn't hear a thing on it until I turned it on, number one. You still couldn't hear anything until I tuned it into a station, number two. Number three, you still couldn't hear anything unless I turned the volume up. Now, my problem is the same as your problem with a prospect. I have to get you, number one, to turn on and to tune into my channel and to turn the volume up of your reception so you hear, understand, and image make about what I say. Now, prospects are the same way. If we walk in and make a good approach and get his attention to where he's listening to us, he can still turn down the volume or tune out to another station or turn us off. I want to give you some tools so that that can be prevented, or if he does it, to get him to turn back on, tune us back in, and turn the volume up so he receives what we're saying. I would say that most of the time when we hear the prospect say, I want to think it over, we got to wait a while, I want to talk to my wife or my attorney, he's not saying that your product isn't good. He's not saying that your personality isn't all right. He's not saying that your service isn't worth the money. What he's saying is, I didn't understand everything you said. And being a prideful human being, if he didn't understand, he won't stop and say, hey, now, wait a minute, I didn't understand that. Instead of that, what he does, he says, I want to think it over. So what we want to do is to make sure that the images he has of our benefit or service, whether they're our images or not, are favorable ones to where he sees and is happy with ownership and use of the product. That's what I'm trying to get to. We've already talked about the mind being like a computer and having input in it. We've already talked about the idea that a gyroscope in the imagination will steer us to become more successful if we've read Dr. Maxwell Maltz's Psycho-Cybernetics. There are some values, though, or some statistics that we haven't discussed yet. How do we receive this information? How does your prospect receive it? Well, from this major university that gave us the statistics on, we forget, 64% of what we hear in 24 hours, they've come up with the five senses, receptivity, percentage-wise, of getting the information. The least receptivity of any of the five senses comes from taste. Only 1% of our input information to our mental computer, only 1% of all information we receive comes through the sense of taste. Number two, the second is touch. 1.5% of all of our input information comes from touching, the tactile touch. Interesting. 3.5% of all of the information we receive to our computer comes from the sense of smell. Now, gentlemen, for you husbands here, I'd like to point out something. Women do not come under this percentage. This is a male percentage on the sense of smell. Women have twice the input sensation from the sense of smell as men. You give a woman a clean sheet, and what does she do? She smells it. You give her a flower, she smells it. She has a receptivity input of smell. In the real estate business, to validate this, the two rooms that they say by the National Real Estate Board that must be sanitary clean and aroma-free are the kitchen and the bathroom, because the woman goes there and she smells what's there. If it's a good smell, she feels good. And a man walks in there and he doesn't smell anything, even the deodorant that may have been sprayed in there. So, first is 1% taste, 1.5% touch, 3.5% smell. 11% of our input of information comes from hearing, and 83% from seeing. That's our sense receptors. Now, the idea then is, since 11% comes from hearing, and words are supposed to create images, if we can get words that create favorable images in the mind of the prospect, we got 94% input of information. If it's just a word without the image making, we only have 11%. And it must be repeated over and over and over in order to get it in. But if we can get words that create favorable images, now we got 94% of all sense input receptivity to the brain, to the computer. Dr. Hugh Russell, in his talk on the whole man concept, by the way, he's a clinical psychologist, he is a sociologist, he's an anthropologist, he has 6 PhDs, a great guy. He's co-authored a book for the life insurance industry. He has a private consulting firm. I've had a chance to work with him and to do some work and study under him a little bit. He has a definition of anxiety that I hope all salespeople who hear this will come back and hear it again or write it out, because it has to do with the blocking of the input of information that people hear or will image make. The word is anxiety, A-N-X-I-E-T-Y, and I'm not trying to insult your intelligence. I want to make sure you heard the word right. Anxiety. Dr. Russell says that anxiety is fear of the unknown. He goes on to say, if a person has an anxiety, that anxiety blocks listening, blocks learning, and cripples the decision-making factors of a human being. Let me say that again. If your prospect has any anxiety about you, your body language, your words, your manner, that blocks his listening, his learning, and cripples the decision-making factor of that human being. Now, there are some negative words which salesmen use which create anxiety in the mind of the prospect. I'm going to ask you, once you hear them, to get your dictionary and a pair of scissors and look through that dictionary until you find this word and mentally make the image as you cut that word out of the dictionary, you cut it out of your mental computer, and that you stop using it forever. Because the behavioral scientist, the psychologist of a major university, came up with a list of 24 words which create adverse images. They came up with 24 words that create favorable images. So what I want you to do with the favorable words is look it up in your dictionary, underline it, and put that into your computer. I'm going to use it all the time. But the unfavorable ones, the negative image words, cut them out, mentally take them out of your computer. Well, Dr. Hugh Russell made one other statement that sort of supports Jack Lacey. He says there are 10 keys to a successful man. The number one key of every successful man he's ever met through his behavioral scientist studies is imagination. Now, if you go to the dictionary and you look up imagination, it means the ability to image make about things that are not yet in existence. That's imagination. Now, if you use the right words with your prospect, you are stimulating his imagination so he image makes around the words you say, which causes him to be a successful man feeling right about buying our product. Does that make sense so far? Okay. Let me give you the definition of motivation according to Dr. Hugh Russell. I think this is important too, because if we use words now which create favorable images, which reduce the anxiety, which make the prospect feel right about owning our product, that's motivation. But we need to know the definition of motivation. Here's the definition that Dr. Hugh Russell gives. Motivation is the ability to change the outside environment and or inside environment mental images of others. That's exciting, I think. Not too long, not too sophisticated, not too difficult. Motivation is the ability to change the outside environment and the inside environment or mental images of another person. It's kind of like little Johnny was 7 years old. I like to tell this story about normal. We think we're normal salespeople. Well, I would submit if we're normal today, and we were normal yesterday, we are subnormal tomorrow because the public buying mind is changing. We've got to stay on top. There's no way to say, I sold this way last year, so I'll sell this way this year. It's impossible to continue to be successful staying normal. In order to be successful in today's market and for the 1970s, we've got to be super normal. So super normal is what we're after. But the definition of normal, Johnny was 7 years old, and as the teacher closed the class one afternoon, he was in the second grade. The teacher said, now, children, when you go home tonight, you have no normal, regular homework. In other words, you don't have to do any math. You don't have any spelling. You don't have any geography. You don't have anything. The only thing I ask you to do is to talk to one of your parents on an adult subject. And whatever you understand out of that, come back to class tomorrow and relate it to the class. She said, you remember how you were in kindergarten? You'd bring a toy and you'd show and tell it. Well, this time, don't bring anything. Just talk to one of your parents on an adult subject. Come back and tell us what happened. So little Johnny rushes home, finds his daddy in the easy chair reading the newspaper. It was 3:30 in the afternoon, and Johnny rushes in, and he jumps up on his daddy's lap while his daddy was reading the newspaper. And little Johnny, you know, thinking about the homework assignment, wanted to get it out of the way so he could go play. So he reaches up, as a seven-year-old would do, pulls down on the newspaper, looks his daddy in the eye, and he said, Daddy, where did I come from? Well, now that kind of stopped Daddy for a minute. He wasn't prepared to talk to his son about sex or anything else and really didn't understand what the son wanted. So he just casually put him off and he said, Son, the stork brought you. Snapped his paper back up and started reading. Johnny didn't move. He sat there a couple of minutes, thought about it, realized he needed more to talk about than just that because all the kids had heard that the stork brought him, you know. So he just reached up on the newspaper a second time, looked his daddy in the eye and he said, Daddy, where did you come from? Well, Daddy paused a little longer this time. He thought, well, this kid's serious, but I'm still not prepared. I'd rather read about the Dallas Cowboys. So, well, son, the stork, too. Snapped his paper back up and started reading again. Johnny sat there a little longer this time, needed more information to report back to school, took his homework seriously. Finally, very tenderly, he reached up, pulled down the newspaper a third time, and he said, Daddy, where did Grandpa come from? Well, about that time, as most daddies would, Daddy lost his patience, dropped his newspaper, shoved his son off his lap, stood up and lectured his son. He said, Son, I told you, the stork brought you, the stork brought me, and the stork also brought Grandpa. Now run along and play and let me read the paper. The next morning, Johnny gets up and goes back to school. Teacher calls the class to order. And she says, well, kids, did you all go home and fulfill your assignment? And all little kids' heads went, yes. And she says, who's ready with his report? Little Johnny's hand went up. She says, all right, John, your hand went up first. You be the first one to report. Now, see the picture as I tell it. 7 years old, second grade, never having been on his feet for a verbal report. So little Johnny, being the first one, being called on, he kind of buttons his little jacket, steps out from behind his desk, and strikes a very formal pose and has a very formal tone to his voice. And he said, teacher and fellow classmates, it's a known fact that in our family, for the past three generations, there have been no normal sexual relationships. And if there is a woman listening to this who feels that I've been a little risque, this story was told by Dr. Murray Banks, a New York psychiatrist who worked for 8 years at Bellevue Hospital, and he told this in Miami Beach to a group of rabbis, ministers, and priests. So I assume it's all right for your ears. I try to make the point with it, though, that whatever was normal for Johnny was not normal for Daddy, and what Daddy thought was not normal for Johnny. What I'm saying then is, what's normal for us and the image we have of our product or our service is not necessarily what the prospect sees as normal. We have to help him see it favorably, even though he doesn't see it the way we do. Now, I have a funny conviction down deep in the southwest corner of my heart. If I owned a dealership that had an automobile for sale, my salesman would drive that automobile. If I sold frozen foods, my salesman would eat the shrimp that we sold to the grocery store. If my salesman sold suits, my salesman would wear my suits. My point is body language, but in addition to that, the inner conviction that what I believe in, the images I have of the benefits of my product, I will convey better through my words if I use the product myself. That's what I'm saying. Words are important. Just before we get to the words, and I may not give you all 24, I want you to work on one or two. I want to give you a tool that will stop the image making of the mind of the prospect. Here's one of our problems. Right at the moment, those of you who are hearing me, your mind is moving four times as fast as I can talk through images. It's almost as though your mind were like a motion picture projector flashing pictures on a screen that had no continuity of story. A ski scene, a swimming scene, a fight scene, a city scene, a war scene, jumping a few seconds at a time. That's the way the images strike the images of the screen of our mind. Well, our prospect now, since you agreed with me that every once in a while you get a prospect whose mind is off on a tangent, he's hearing our words but they're not registering, he is off somewhere else. His mind now is off on a tangent image making. Now, how do you get him to listen to you? The only word I know of that's guaranteed to stop his image making to where he now will have a tendency or a possibility or the probability of image making around your words that immediately follow this word. Only one word that I know of. Would you print in large letters if you're writing? If you're not writing, memorize, blaze this in your picture of your mind as though it were a red-hot brand branding it on your brain. N-A-M-E. Name. Now, one of the things that I've trained people to do, salesmen especially, is get the prospect's name, get him to spell it, get him to pronounce it. Use it during the visit period, and always remember, whether he buys or not, when you shake hands as you leave him, just as you're starting out his office door or out the front door, call him by name. That makes him feel important. That shows that you understand he's a human being, has identity. That shows you're not so self-conscious that you're not conscious of somebody else. But I would submit the only word in the English language that will stop somebody's image making, Mr. Patterson, is that person's name. And Mr. Patterson, when I mentioned your name, no matter what kind of images you had, no matter where you were, no matter what you were thinking, you stopped mentally and came to attention. And your prospects will do the same thing. Here's a rule of thumb. Get that prospect's name, then use that name every third sentence or every third question throughout your entire presentation, all the time you're in his presence. Now, Mr. Patterson, what this means then is every time you use his name, it's as though there were a switch on this motion picture projector that I could turn and it stops it on one frame. And Mr. Patterson, what that means then, that the words you use following his name, his images now being stopped, it has a chance to turn that switch so he'll image make around the beneficial statement you're about to make of your service. In other words, you're leading, steering, guiding, directing, first stopping his images, then leading, steering, guiding, and directing his images around the words you're trying to say. Now, some of you who are hearing this, you might say, well, now, wait a minute, Tom. If I use his name every third sentence or every third question, won't he begin thinking that I'm using a gimmick? Won't he begin thinking I'm kind of oily and sticky? Won't he begin thinking that I'm overdoing it? I would submit to you, Mr. Patterson, right now, unless he thinks back, cannot tell me how many times I've used his name. You see, your prospect, when you use his name, is not saying with a little pad, scratch pad, and a pencil, he used my name once, there's two, there's three, that's four, five, he's getting sticky. That isn't what the prospect does. When you use his name, his images come to a halt. So he can't keep score on you. And if your body language, if your sincerity, if your product will give him service and you believe it, then the words you use following the use of his name, he will image make around them. I ask you to field research and field test it for yourself. All it'll do is put money in your pocket. Get his name, use it every third sentence or every third question. Now, if you must have some variety, as some salesmen say, you can begin a question with his name. Mr. Patterson, that makes sense, doesn't it? Or you can end the question. That makes sense, doesn't it, Mr. Patterson? If you have to have some variety for your own image. But I would submit the way to do it is to, at the beginning of a powerful statement, a beneficial statement, a statement of words around which you want him to see himself owning, benefiting, and being happy with your product, you start it with his name. Then, about 10 to 14 seconds later, his mind has a tendency to weaken and go off on its own tangent. Now what you have to do is use his name again. And what'll happen is, at your close, he will not say, I want to think it over, quite as many times as he's been saying before. He will not say, I got to think about it. He will not say, I got to talk to my wife or my lawyer. Instead, he'll say, well, you know, that does make sense, because he's image made around your highly beneficial statements, which is communicating to him the images because you stopped his other image making, giving him a chance to image make around your words. You will improve your closes through cybernetically creating the favorable images in his mind by the use of his name somewhere between 10 and 90%, and that's a pretty long range. But you will increase them. Let me give you some words now, as many as I can get in, that the psychology department of a university, after spending 7 years and I think it's 7 or 8 months developing these words, and we have been field testing them in the field of selling for 3 years. I'm going to give you the first 6 words positive, the first 6 words negative, which we field researched, which now have 3.5 years experience. And every salesman who has ever used them, reporting back to me personally or back to the man with whom I worked, his sales manager, has indicated the salesman not only feels better, but the prospect understands more. Remember, the use of his name stops his images. The first word that I ask you to cut out of your dictionary, it's a negative word. It's an unfavorable image word almost every time it's used. Not always, but if 51% of the time it might create an unfavorable image, obviously we don't want those odds. We want 51% in our favor. The word is deal, D-E-A-L. Now this comes, unfortunately, and if there are automobile salesmen who are listening to this, I can't apologize. It just happened that way. To illustrate it, my wife and I went to an automobile dealership 3 days before Thanksgiving last fall. We wanted a station wagon. She had a convertible. We're going on overnights. We're taking scouts. We got kids all over the neighborhood who go with us. And it's miserable to try to buy a car today. We walked into this dealership in the valley, and 18 minutes, I timed it. After we walked in, the guy got up and said, can I help you? And I said, well, I don't know. I don't see a station wagon on the floor. And he said, oh, well, that doesn't make any difference. You see, we don't have all our models in yet. Tell me what you'd like to have. So we visited with him. We'd slammed doors and sat in the cars and liked one of them, the color. Said, can you get me that one in that color in a station wagon? And he said, well, what all do you want on it? So I started telling him what I wanted on it. And he said, I'll tell you what, Mr. and Mrs. Norman, you come into my office because I'm going to make you the best deal in the valley. And at that moment, my image making switched from what he said to my previous experience. My computer started giving me answers, and my answer was, look out, baby, somebody's going to take advantage of somebody else, and it ain't going to be me. So from that minute on, the only thing my mind would receive was I wanted to make sure that air conditioner was going to cost what he said it would. So when he wrote the extension down, I looked at it. I added up his addition three times. I double-checked the trade-in. I was suspicious from then on. Now, I'm not going to say it works in every field, but every salesman I've ever talked to, saying to him, remove that from your conversation with a prospect. Remove it from your private conversation with your fellow salesman, because it'll trip you up if you don't. Cut it out of your language. Cut it out of your dictionary, because if it is possible for that to create an adverse image, don't use it. Now, a favorable image, word, safety, S-A-F-E-T-Y. I don't know whether everybody's aware of it or not, but last year, General Motors called in over 750,000 General Motors cars. Because there was a possibility a small idling arm in a four-bell carburetor had a fatigue stress to it, which meant it was possible it would crack, jam the carburetor open at a high speed. I know I had to take two cars in. No charge, about 7/10 of an hour to replace it once they had the parts. Now, I say General Motors didn't do that just to make me happy, but they did it to create an image in my mind that General Motors is conscious of my safety and my family's safety. That's the image they tried to create. Now, when you talk to a prospect, using the word safety creates a favorable image in his mind. Not necessarily safety about the product or the service, but safety in his dealings with you and your company. You might use it this way. Mr. Prospect, one of the things you're going to like about dealing with us is that you are going to be safe. Or there is safety in our arrangements with our company. Or you're going to have safety because of this paragraph in this agreement. Now, when you say the word safety, since everybody is safety conscious, he image makes positively around the benefits that follow the word. That is a word that most human brain computers will react favorably to. Not your image, but his image of safety.
You have finished side A. Now, let's get ready for side B. Depress the fast forward button and hold it until all the tape is on the right-hand side of the cassette. You can then turn the cassette over and listen to side B from the start.